you're listening to the Divorce and Your Money Show, the number one show on iTunes that discusses financial issues and divorce. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and certified divorce financial analyst. Is your spouse a narcissist? More specifically, do they have narcissistic personality disorder? Or maybe they have borderline personality disorder. It's not something that just only affects men or only affects women. And maybe if you think your spouse might be a narcissist or have borderline personality disorder, we have a special guest interview today. I have Bill Eddy. You're going to love him. He is the author of the book Splitting, Protecting Yourself While Divorcing Someone with Borderline or Narcissistic Personality Disorder. This is an awesome interview. Be sure to listen to it. I know a lot of you are going to identify almost too closely with what's in this interview. So without further ado, here's my interview with Bill Eddy. Today we have a very special guest. We have with us Bill Eddy. He is a family lawyer, family therapist, president of the High Conflict Institute, and author of an awesome book called Splitting, Protecting Yourself While Divorcing Someone with Borderline or Narcissistic Personality Disorder. Bill, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sean. I'm looking forward to discussing this with you.
So, Bill, let's start by giving us your background. As I said, you're a therapist and an attorney. Is that right?
That's correct. And I started out as a therapist and basically did that for 12 years as a licensed clinical social worker. I counseled children, I counseled adults, I counseled people with depression, anxiety, sometimes personality disorders. I've worked in hospital settings, in inpatient psychiatric settings for adults and adolescents, and I've also worked in outpatient clinics. So I did that first, and that was pretty much the 1980s. Then I became a lawyer and focused on family law and started that in 1993. So I've actually been practicing as a family lawyer for over 20 years.
And so you have certainly a unique perspective both on the legal aspects and the emotional aspects that are going on with people as it applies to divorce and splitting.
That's absolutely right. And you can't really separate the two, even if you try. So that's a lot of what led me to write this book.
So let's dig into splitting for a second. I think given the current cultural environment, you know, the knowledge of, or at least the awareness of borderline personality and narcissistic personality is certainly within the cultural lexicon these days. And I know that even just from our conversations that your book sales are actually increasing every month just with people wanting to know more about the subject. But let's start at the beginning. What is borderline personality and narcissistic personality?
Well, basically, I learned about those when I started out as a therapist. They're technically diagnoses if someone has the disorder. So borderline personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder are two of the 10 personality disorders in the manual that therapists use to diagnose people. That's the DSM-5 now. It basically means that the person is really, really stuck, that they don't have flexibility, that they just keep doing things over and over again. They have problems in their interpersonal relationships, and they keep repeating the patterns of those problems. And the patterns, basically with borderline personality disorder, and I want to say some people may have traits, but not a whole disorder. This is a real kind of a continuum. But borderline personality is particularly notable by extreme mood swings. So someone may be very loving, friendly, just one of the most charming, appealing people. And then just on a second, they can reverse course and be incredibly rageful, furious, angry, throwing things sometimes, violent sometimes, more often verbally abusive. And then the next day, they're like, oh, how you doing? And you feel like saying, well, what was going on yesterday? But you don't want to do that. You don't want to reopen that kind of thing. So that's the pattern, just in a nutshell, with borderline personalities, extreme kind of love you, hate you, mood swings. With narcissistic personality, the emphasis is more on their self-esteem, and they have a hard time regulating their self-esteem, just like borderlines have a hard time regulating their emotions. So narcissists are always pumping themselves up. They're trying to look big and be important and emphasize, you know, I'm great, I'm superior to everybody else. And they look down on other people. So both of these personalities kind of have these more extremes. And it's part of how they manage themselves, but they're particularly difficult in a relationship. And if you divorce somebody like this, it often triggers some of their worst behavior. So that's just a very brief nutshell. But a caution I want to make is don't tell somebody you think they have one of these disorders. It just makes your life miserable.
I think that's wise advice. You know, I hear from people all the time, including many of the listeners from the show. They'll send me an email and they'll say, hey, I think I'm living with, or actually they'll be quite sure that their spouse is, usually they'll say, has narcissistic personality disorder. What kind of specific behaviors might lend someone to really know if they're living with a narcissist or if they are just kind of making it up or you know, maybe misdiagnosing someone or shouldn't even be in the game of diagnosing their spouse? What kind of things should someone really look for?
Let me start with some cautionary words to your last question, which is people shouldn't be diagnosing their spouses, and especially shouldn't be saying to their spouse or to other people, hey, my husband, my wife, my boyfriend, my girlfriend has this personality disorder. Because that upsets everybody, you know, whether someone has it or not. So what I encourage is have your private working theory. In other words, in your mind, think, okay, well, maybe this person is a narcissist. What should I be looking for and how should I be responding? But I'm not saying this out loud. So with a narcissist, what you often see is that they do a lot of insults. They'll put you down. They'll say, well, that's stupid. You know, why did you do that? You know, you didn't clean up the such and such. You know, you're really awful. You're really, you know, you're like a hateful slob. Or why did you say that to your friend? You know, you're so obnoxious. You're so stupid. So it's insults that put you down. And you feel put down. But also narcissists take up all the oxygen in the room. So they want to talk about themselves. There's the saying, you know, well, enough about me. Now let's talk about me. and you can pick that up sometimes early in the dating process, is that they really are absorbed. They forget things about you. They just, it's kind of like you're not there except as an audience for them. So there's the insults, there's the self-centeredness. They want to be admired and they want you to spend a lot of time saying how wonderful they are. Doesn't this make me look wonderful? Don't you think I really killed it when I gave that presentation? Don't you think? And I mean, everybody wants to get some praise, but they're stuck with that. And that's the thing with these personality disorders, is people are just really, really stuck. They're kind of like everybody else, but they don't have the flexibility in a close relationship to give back. Narcissists really have a hard time giving back, and they lack empathy. They're like, well, why did that bother you? Yeah, I stepped on your toe, but so what? And they may humiliate and embarrass you in public, and that's one of the signs also. So that's narcissistic personality disorder in a relationship.
Unfortunately, I think that you're describing a lot of people that people know. Just from those descriptions, I can feel my own head nodding and going off a checklist of certain people who certainly display those behaviors. Now, of course, like you, I will continue to keep that as a working theory, but I'm sure many of the listeners as well can certainly identify or at least know someone who fits that description almost perfectly.
Yeah, and that's really true. I want to mention, and we mentioned this in the splitting book, that we're looking at about 6% of the U.S. population have this as a disorder. There's a huge study was done a few years ago. As a disorder, that means the person doesn't change. They just keep doing this and feedback, negative consequences. Maybe they get fired. Maybe people split up with them. They don't change. That's the problem. So about 6% of people. But people have some traits of this, maybe not a disorder. And so you probably double that in terms of people who have some noticeable traits, although people without the disorder may be more able to tone it down, more able to change over time. But yeah, there's a lot of people with that. And I want to add something here is personalities are kind of a combination of genetics and environment. So the way you're born is partly influencing who you're going to be, and your environment influences that. And over the last, 40 years or so, narcissism has increased because we have a more self-centered lifestyle, through the media, with all of our handheld devices. We spend a lot of time alone with our devices. And so we all have perhaps some narcissistic tendencies, but it's not a disorder if it's not dysfunctional and messing up your relationships. And most people reflect on themselves. They say, oops, what can I do differently when something goes wrong in a relationship? The disorder is when people never look at themselves.
And why don't you explain that last point just a little bit more, is what actually distinguishes a disorder from just someone who exhibits some elements of a trait?
Yeah, it's really that stuckness, that they really don't change, they really don't look at themselves, and they're preoccupied with everybody else's behavior. So if something goes wrong, like if you're in a relationship with someone with narcissistic personality disorder, they're going to be able to talk about what you've done wrong without admitting a single thing on their part. And that's a warning sign. If they're like surprising you with telling you all these things, let me address you. Let me tell you what you're doing wrong. Here's how you should really be. That's a common narcissistic trait. And the disorder is when they're really stuck there, can't look at themselves, can't change, and really are focused on others. When it's not a disorder, it may be someone is more self-absorbed or kind of some minor insults, but then they back up and say, oh, I'm sorry I said that. I didn't really mean to. So it's really the self-awareness and the flexibility. That's the big difference.
And let's return to borderline personality disorder. It's less well understood, I feel like, by most people. If you're living with someone or in a relationship with someone who has borderline personality disorder, why don't you explain some of those everyday traits that you might see a little bit more?
Yeah, the big thing is those mood swings. So let's say you're sitting on the couch watching a show on TV and everything's going fine, and your partner suddenly says, are you having an affair? And you go, no, why would you say that? Well, you seem kind of quiet tonight. I'm quiet because I'm watching this show. I'm feeling comfortable. We're cozy on the couch. And so they start an argument because they feel more connected when there's more emotion. So when things are calm, they often get stressed that something's wrong. And so that's really hard on a partner who, when things are calm, feels good because it's nice to have a calm time in a relationship. So it's this roller coaster, and you feel like you're walking on eggshells. In fact, my co-author with the splitting book, Randy Kreger, was co-author of a book, Stop Walking on Eggshells, just about this type of, living with someone with borderline personality disorder. So it's the mood swings, but part of it is the intense anger that they can go into a rage that's frightening. And as I said, sometimes abusive, sometimes it becomes physical. People hit or push or throw things. And it's a lot of it's verbal, but their anger, they feel justified to really hurt the other person. They may say terrible things, spread rumors, engage in what we call a distortion campaign. And especially when someone's getting divorced, a borderline person is really outraged and they feel it's in their right to publicly humiliate and attack their former loved partner. So it's this extreme swings. But underneath, I want to mention, is they have a fear of abandonment. And so they kind of cling to people in relationships. And then if they think they're being abandoned, they go into this rage. So it's feeling that roller coaster, that walking on eggshells, like you never know what's going to trigger and another explosion. That's kind of that.
And Bill, do both disorders affect men and women? One have a greater percentage than the other in terms of experiencing or having these disorders?
Well, this big study that was done a few years ago, National Institutes of Health study, said that borderline is slightly more women than men. It's about, I think it was 53 to 47%, something like that. And narcissistic is more men than women. I think that's like 63 to 37, 62% men, 38% women. So, but I guess the point with this is it's both. And don't assume that, you know, a woman who acts like this must have borderline personality and a man who acts like this must have narcissistic personality. And one of the things that we're seeing is there may be up to a 40% overlap with these two disorders. So if you're dealing with someone who shows some self-centeredness and then they get really angry, you might go, gee, is this narcissistic or borderline? It could be both. And I might mention in the younger age, younger adults, this seems to be more prevalent than in older adults. So the generation that's most likely to be dating, there's a higher incidence of this. So people really need to learn about it so that they don't stumble into a relationship with someone who's super charming and then turns out to be borderline or narcissistic or both.
Let's shift gears a bit because I think that's an excellent overview into both borderline personality disorder and narcissistic personality disorder. Now, you know, everyone listening is considering the divorce process. And if you're going to be divorcing someone who, with your working theory, as you said, has one or both of these disorders, how do you even begin? What's your first step if you think that your spouse kind of has, probably, highly likely, has one of these disorders and it's time to get a divorce? Let's talk in terms of practical. What's the first step that you should kind of start doing in that world?
Well, I think you really need to prepare yourself. And if possible, it's better to do preparations before you announce that you want to get a divorce. Because with someone, as I described, say a borderline or narcissist, this is going to trigger their worst emotions and their worst response. So you want to get prepared. You want to gather your information, do some reading, ideally talk to a lawyer, at least consult with a lawyer, talk to a therapist, say, what should I expect? I'm concerned. These are some signs that my partner shows. What should I be expecting here? You want to prepare yourself. You want to get support, have people to help you go through this, because the more clear you are, the more supported you are, the less likely you are to trigger the worst responses. But it's unpredictable because you're not really responsible for what the other person does.
And do you need to keep a record, for instance, of maybe fights that you had or arguments or just different behavioral things that occurred over time?
And that's one thing we recommend is keep a journal somewhere safe so it's not, you know, found by your partner, of concerning events. With a lot of cases when people get divorced from a borderline or narcissist, and by the way, there's other personalities that can give people difficulties. So even though the book focuses on those two, the same principles are involved if your partner is particularly paranoid or particularly antisocial or dramatic, histrionic, those kinds of things. Same process. So by keeping some writing of worst events, you know, let's say there was a pushing event where each of you pushed each other, or one yelled something and you yelled something back in front of the children. You want to write down what really happened, because a lot of times high conflict divorce cases start with an emergency hearing and someone's asking for a restraining order. And a lot of cases I've had started that way. Someone with borderline or narcissistic personality exaggerated events to get a restraining order and get their partner kicked out of the house. So I tell people, you know, on a quiet day, walk around your house, photograph your furniture, make copies of bank accounts. So if you get thrown out of the house, you still have all this information. Maybe set aside a little bit of cash to get you through if something like this happens. Or maybe your partner's going to wipe out a bank account. We're not suggesting you take much out of a bank account. In California, it's community property. It's 50-50. I tell clients never take more than 50% of a bank account. But even that may not be appropriate. So that's why you should talk to a local lawyer. But these kinds of preparations, be prepared for a firestorm if you're dealing with someone like this, because people are so often caught by surprise. I've had people read our splitting book and say, you know, everything you said might happen happened. I'm so glad I knew what to expect because it was so surprising until I read the book. So I think it's getting people psychologically and legally prepared.
And Bill, you mentioned perhaps what could happen when the children are involved. Could you tell us a couple of things? The first is, what kind of things should you watch out for when you have children and you're about to embark on this divorce process with someone with borderline or narcissistic personality disorder? And second is, I think you have some specialized resources, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So the first thing is, you may start hearing from the kids that the other parent's saying things negative about you. That's often a warning sign that there's difficulty, because parents shouldn't be bad-mouthing each other to the kids. You have a problem with each other, talk directly to each other. But that's a very common thing, is indirectly talking to the kids negatively about the other parent. Sometimes the kids start seeming to resist being around one of the parents, even if you're both in the same house. This is what they call alienation, where one person's bad-mouthing the other parent in front of the kids, and the kids absorb that and may even join in with that. I've had families where there's a narcissistic parent, and the kids start talking like that parent to the other parent, saying, well, Mom, you're stupid, you know. Why did you do that? You're annoying, you know. And you suddenly get these criticisms with words that you know came from the other parent. So these are warning signs. These are things you might want to write down, because they show the kids being influenced even at an early time. On the other hand, you yourself want to be careful not to do that. And one of the things, this really answers your second question, one of the things we've developed is a method of working with kids and even parents going through divorce called New Ways for Families. We've developed a whole program which is being used in 5 or 6 family court districts, systems. And what it does is it has 4 big skills that parents learn and practice and teach to their children. But any parent can teach these skills at any time, even if you're still with a partner, especially a difficult partner. And the 4 skills are flexible thinking, managed emotions, moderate behavior, and checking yourself rather than having opinions about everybody else, is looking at yourself. By teaching the kids these 4 skills in general, it helps them understand that what the other parent is doing is really inappropriate, like all or nothing thinking or unmanaged emotions. So rather than criticizing the other parent, you can say, wow, you know, that person on TV, do you think he had managed emotions or unmanaged emotions? Or your friend just did something extreme. Do you think that was all or nothing thinking or flexible thinking? So that the kids learn these as skills for life, which will really help them in their lives, but they also can understand that the other parent's really kind of out of bounds without you bad-mouthing the other parent. So this is kind of an approach to managing before a divorce, if there may be problems, and if there is a divorce, to use this method to help calm things and hopefully manage helping the kids through the divorce process.
We'll include a link to New Ways for Families in the show notes so people can learn a little bit more about your approach, because I think that's extraordinarily valuable and particularly helpful in this situation. One other thing I wanted to ask is, how do you choose an appropriate attorney given the unique issues involved in this particular scenario where they might need some sort of specialized skill or at least a different approach than just the local attorney you might know from the billboard?
This is a little tricky, but basically what I recommend is talk to three lawyers and try to get names of lawyers from somebody you know who felt good about working with their lawyer. Because to be honest, you know, I've been a family lawyer now for over 20 years, and I'd say 80% of family lawyers really want to help their clients. And 10 to 20% are stuck in trying to make money from people's pain, essentially. These are the ones that you hear about in the news. And I don't want to deny they exist, but I think they're about 20%. So 80% people are satisfied with, they found them helpful, they could communicate with them. So the thing is to get three names and see who you feel comfortable communicating with. Communication with your lawyer is the number one thing. Even if they're not well-versed in borderline or narcissistic personality disorder, and most family lawyers have not been trained in that, but if you can communicate with them, then you can tell them, well, this is what I see, or this is what I've read, this is my concern. And I do consulting with clients and their lawyers on the phone about strategy for dealing with these. And the lawyers are appreciative because it's an area they don't know. And their clients are appreciative because they realize things they feel like doing, they need to be more careful about. So the idea is, interview three lawyers and pick the one you feel you can communicate with the best. Also, though, is ideally get someone with at least 5 years' experience as a family lawyer. Family law is a complicated area, legally and emotionally, and you need someone that's familiar with how all these interact. So someone with at least 5 years' experience and someone you can communicate with. Those are the key essential ingredients.
I think all this information is extraordinarily helpful for the people listening. For those who want additional information from you, what are the best resources that you can point them to get some more information about yourself?
Well, the best is to come to our website, and it's www.highconflictinstitute. That's highconflictinstitute.com. And we have books, we have videos, we have articles, we have information about consultation, and also about giving seminars. We give a lot of seminars actually all over the world, mostly the US, but the dynamics of these problems are really the same worldwide. This is about families, about kids, about personalities. And it's really important, I think, to get informed. And we've got, you know, people that like books, we've got books. People that like articles, we've got free articles. So I think we're trying to be a resource in as many ways as possible. HighConflictInstitute.com.
Bill, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Oh, 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 oh. You know, I get emails from a lot of you. My email address, by the way, is Sean, S-H-A-W-N, at divorceandyourmoney.com. I get emails from you, and often some of you say, I think I have a spouse who's a narcissist. Well, now you know some of the telltale signs that your spouse might fit this. And I know a lot of you listening, that fits your spouse perfectly, unfortunately. But now you know, you have some good information, and be sure to check out the resources. You can find them all in the show notes, but all the links to Bill Eddy's material. He is the number one expert in the United States when it comes to these issues, and he's one of the few people who both merges the emotional side and the legal side when dealing with people with personality disorders, like narcissistic personality disorder, borderline personality disorder. So make sure you go check those out. If you just look at the show notes or on the Divorce and Your Money website, you'll see links to all of the material. And also, at the end of this episode, after all of the resources, if you just stick through the very end, don't turn it off, there is a bonus story that Bill tells us, and it particularly is worth listening to if you have children, and how to handle a borderline personality person. Now, before you go, there's some additional resources in addition to Bill's that I want to make sure you're aware of. They're all available at divorceandyourmoney.com. There's three things that you should really check out. The first is just sign up for the email newsletter. It's confidential. You just type in your email address and you will start getting updates from me and some special bonus content that you won't find anywhere else. The second thing you do is you should get my book, Divorce and Your Money, The No-Nonsense Guide. It's available on Amazon. It only costs $10 or $20, depending on if you get the electronic or the ebook version. It will give you a big overview of all the financial concepts you need to be aware of as you go through the divorce process. And it will give you a great perspective on just all the things you might not have even known that you needed to think about. And it has great checklists and financial information in there. The third thing you should do is, some of you I know because I get to work with you directly, but need one-on-one coaching. You have a particular issue that you're thinking about, or you're just preparing for your divorce, or you know, you've actually been in the process, maybe in mediation, you're about to sign the final agreement, but you just want someone to check to make sure that everything makes sense and that you can afford what you're going to sign. Whatever the case may be, you should consider getting some coaching. It doesn't matter where you are in the United States or even international. I know some Americans who live abroad who are going through the divorce process and still get some of the coaching issues for their financial issues that they have on hand. But if you want that coaching, you should just click on the coaching tab, fill out a short form, and we will have an introductory call to see if it is right for you. Finally, subscribe to the show. It's on iTunes or your favorite podcast player, and help other people find this show. Leave a review on iTunes. A 5-star review really helps improve our rankings and helps other people find this information, and share it with a friend. If you know someone who needs this, just send them a link. It's free information, and it can be really helpful for someone, even if they haven't quite decided to broach the divorce process. This is good information to help them get prepared and know things that they should think about. I'm your host, Sean Lehman, MBA and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst. Now for some bonus content. Bill, you have a lot of experience, and I'm sure you've seen so many different things, especially when you're dealing with both borderline and narcissistic personality disorders. Can you just share with us a story that comes to mind that would be good for the listeners to hear?
Sure. Happy to do that. So I'll give you an example that involves our New Ways for Families method for people going through divorce, which teaches skills to the parents and then the parents to the kids. So in one of the court systems where this is being used, there was a case where there was a mom who seemed to have extreme thinking, and my guess is probably had borderline personality traits, if not the disorder. And she spoke highly negatively of the father around the daughter, they had a 15-year-old daughter, who during the divorce process became very resistant to spending any time with her father. She really took sides. And we see this, it's called alienation, when there's no reason for this, but kids take sides. And so dad, of course, was frustrated and angry, but the girl eventually stopped seeing him. After, I believe it was about a year that she hadn't seen him, she refused to see him. Both parents took the skills training of our New Ways for Families method. And part of that is 6 individual sessions for each parent with their own counselor, then 3 parent-child sessions, each parent alone with the kids. And so part of it is to have the parents support each other. So mom agreed that the daughter should meet with the father 3 times, and she encouraged her daughter to do that. And the daughter agreed because it was only 3 times, even though she said she hated her father. So she meets the first time with her father, and basically he says, tell me, you know, I know you're upset with me. I know you're angry. Tell me what you're upset about. So she dumps on him for, I don't know, 20 minutes or something, everything he's ever done wrong from her point of view and how awful he is. And then he says, thank you, because he was trained to be open and to listen and not to get angry back. And the daughter was confused. She says, why are you thanking me? I just said all these angry things. I thought you'd be angry at me. And he says, no, I'm glad that we're talking. Tell me more. And so they got talking, and he was open to her, and the mother had encouraged her to talk. And so it really turned things around for them. And after not seeing him for a year, now they have dinners together once a week. Now, it isn't a 50-50 schedule like he would have liked, but he has a relationship with his daughter. They're communicating. They're on positive terms. So that's an example, I think, of how the all-or-nothing intense emotions kind of often push kids to take sides, and a way to try to undo that by focusing on positive skills instead of who's to blame and who's at fault. So I think that I'm real pleased with that story.
Awesome.